So this lecture is something that I actually wrote as a present to my godfather on Easter Day, while everyone was eating chocolate bears or chocolate bunnies. I was writing in quiet. So I will read and share with you some thoughts, and after that I will write it down more proper, and I will put it in an envelope and send it to California. And I say, happy belated Easter, because he's now in Cuba, ordaining some people as bishops in the Liberal Catholic Church. So he's doing his work as well. So as we all know, from time immemorial, fire has been a symbol of a very sacred thing, as a very, very spiritual thing, not just as a combustion, nature process that happens and that is it. So it's something beyond that, something held as very, very sacred. We all have heard of the sacrifice, the fire sacrifice of the Hindus. You are very, very well familiar with that. We have heard of the fire temples where the eternal flame was guarded and kept by the Zoroastrians. We have heard of, perhaps not as much, of the central fire of Pythagoras. We have heard, obviously, of the burning bush of Moses. The fire and divine egohood of Christus burning within the body of Jesus. The upright equilateral triangle of the of my dear friends, alchemists. We have also heard, even from the Native Americans, the ancient ones used to say that they were born of fire as well. They were sons of fire. Does anyone know who is the first god worshipped in the hymns of the Rig Veda? Who knows?
Who's?
Agni, the god of fire. And do you know why? Manoji, do you know why?
No?
No? All right, let us, as we go through this lecture, you will figure out on your own. There is a reason why. So the teachings of the Holy Rishis was a knowledge that came from deep spiritual sources. They enter deeply into the processes of nature and realize so well the activity of the spirit within these processes. All that surrounded men then was connected and referred back to the five so-called elements. They used to call it, Manuji, Panchabhutas. Yes, Panchamahabhutas or Panchabhutas at a lower level. So these elements were not seen as just a mere substances, but as different states of the one consciousness of life. We had earth, which was a state of the material realm in which all the solidity of the earth was held in their consciousness as something earthly, whether it was a piece of gold or stone, the human body. Perhaps not so much of the human body, because there was so much to it that they didn't hold it as something physical completely, but all the earthly processes as far as tangible you could feel. The water, it was a liquid state. Everything that flows, everything that was not solid but perceivable, even the metals, you know, the alchemists used to melt things, made lead into gold. That was a process. So the liquidity of the metals were also a liquid state, a water state. You had air, which was a state in which, you know, this encompasses all the gases of the atmosphere, you know, and also our personal atmosphere is filled with gases. Oxygen, hydrogen, and, you know, so on. Then you had fire, which was seen and felt as warmth or heat, not necessarily as the burning flame as we see it right here. It was something subtler than that. And above all, you had a fifth element, which that fifth element unfolds into seven more, or, you know, threefold, sevenfold. I really have no time to go into that right now, but I would just mention it because this is probably a postlude to Pablo's lecture the other night that he was touching upon the Akashic records. So it is important for us to know what is exactly Akasha. If we don't know what exactly is, but just by saying reading the Akashic records have no meaning at all. We are fooling ourselves. So this Akasha was the fifth element. And it was said to be the synthesis of all the forces of nature. It was the universal space, well, still is, hasn't changed at all, is eternal. It was the universal solvent of the alchemists, pervading all things. So it was an above state of consciousness, is permeating, pervading all, everything, but at a very subtle, subtle state. It was, I'm not sure who is familiar with this, but I'm just going to say, because we need to educate our knowledge and bring it to a higher state. The alchemists used to call this the alchylist, and this was what permitted this process of spiritual transmutation inside the human beings. It was a very, very mysterious thing through which the Philosopher's Stone was achieved, and that was that power within, the quintessence of this spiritual transmutation laid in this particular element. But I'm just going to put a period there because it's a realm that I feel very humble to talk about, and I have, you know, still much blindness. Only God, only the higher ones can penetrate those mysteries. So I bow to that, and I leave it up to you to research deeper into it. It is said, just to give you a perspective as to what an Akasha is, it is said to be, compared with the ether, as the spirit is compared to matter, that level of subtlety. Can you feel that? It was that subtle. But of all these living elements and magical things that happen upon the earth, there was one in particular that the rishis held most important and most interesting to their research, and that was the element of fire. With the birth of modern science, obviously, the Copernican revolution, it is said that the fire was put out. So all this communion and insight into these mysterious processes of nature, in a way, fell asleep into the darkness of materialism. So since then, our consciousness shifted for a particular reason. There is a purpose to that. And we need to find out that purpose. And at some point, when the time is right, we will awaken again to talk to the stars and to talk to the beings that we seem to be deaf or blind to. We will get there. So I would like to share with you a passage from a book that we have in the library that is called Scientific Corroborations of Theosophy. And the reason why I want to share with you, because it's one of my favorite quotes from HPB, perhaps one of the less known. And it so happens that as this consciousness fell asleep, there were a few beings or a few great souls that kept awake. And those great souls whispered into the ears of their disciples a single word or a single sentence. They said, "All is life." And for that, they were persecuted. They were burned in a stake. they were crucified. And up to this day, you know all the horrors that humankind have committed, not wanting to hear these truths. It's a very simple truth, but it's very scary to many people. It's very, very scary. So the quote reads like this. The expression employed by science, inorganic substance, means simply that the latent life slumbering in the molecules of so-called inert matter is incognizable. All is life, and every atom of even mineral dust is alive, though beyond our comprehension and perception, because it is outside of the range of the laws known to those who reject occultism. In this case, occultism was taken as the hidden science, you know, the hidden side of things, and those who were able to penetrate with their sensitivity and their cosmic vision into these mysteries of nature. It was not a, you know, a cult, and it was not a, you know, a negative black thing. It was a different insight. It was a different kind of clairvoyance. It was not a clairvoyance of seeing ghosts and all that, which is a realm, is there, but it was deeper than that. I would say more spiritual than that. So this is why the sacred fire was kept lit as a symbol of the one life in all. You see, you can start making the correlations and the connections and giving more meaning to these things that have become just like the husk, empty husks, fire, and so many other things. So HPV advised her students of theosophy before they delved into the serious study of theosophy. She advised to hold on to four fundamental ideas in order for us to understand what she was trying to convey to us with so much effort, with so much courage, and yet we still don't get it. So she said to us, just in brief, this is another wonderful book. It is called Foundations of Esoteric Philosophy. It's excerpts from HPV's writings. So the first advice she gave her students was something to do with the fundamental unity of all existence, that everything was one. The second idea had to do with what I just read. There is not such a thing as dead matter. You know, not unless we observe the processes of nature, as we are going to walk through right now. For us, we think that things are just physical. There is no life to that. The third basic idea to be held is that man is the microcosms, as he saw when all the hierarchies of the heavens exist within him. In other words, as above, so below, and we are in the middle, as part of it. Then the fourth fundamental idea is a summary of the three first, and this is most beautiful. And this is, in a way, it's like an elaboration of the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below. As it is the inner, so is the outer. As it is the great, so is the small. As it is above, so is below. There is but one life and law, and he that worketh it is one. Nothing is inner, nothing is outer. Nothing is great, nothing is small. Nothing is high, and nothing is low in the divine economy. she says, no matter what one takes as studying the secret doctrine, and I will add to that as any other study, no matter what study it is, we or one must correlate it with these basic ideas. If we don't do so, the study loses its purpose and its meaning and its value. But this divine economy, as we all know, it is a very, very complex dynamic system, so to speak. We just need to look around to all the, you know, occurrences of nature and all the phenomena of nature outside of us and inside of us to realize that it is not a simple thing. So you have, at a very high level, you have, or at a very more cosmic level, you have these cosmic cycles. In theosophy, we call them yugas. Also in Hinduism, huge cycles of eternity. Within that, you have manvantaras, or mahamanvantaras and pralayas. You have, within that, manvantaras and pralayas, smaller cycles. Then within that, you have all the earthly rhythms of the seasons. You have the in-breaths and the out-breaths of the equinoxes and solstices. We have the cycles of death and birth. What else do we have? But in between all these processes, we see a pattern. And this pattern has to do with spirit going into matter and the other way around, matter spiritualizing. So it's a cycle, but in a way, it never comes to the same place. It is always renewing, regenerating, evolving. So it's never, ever the same. My grandmother said to me, you never go twice to the same river. And I used to go to this one river so many times and say, aren't you tired of it? I know. You never go twice to the same river. She was so dear to me. So this is the great and lawful economy of the universe. Transcending all is the one life, always remaining, indestructible, imperishable, eternal. I'm not sure how many of you agree with this such thing called by the quantum physics or physicists as a conservation of energy law. Are you familiar with that? But in my opinion, it is not about conservation, but it is a process of transformation, of renewal, of regeneration of energy. It is not destroyed, obviously not, but it's always anew. And the process of creation, it is infinite. It is always emanating. It is always creating. If you can hold that in your consciousness for a second, you know, it really blows your mind away because it's hard to grasp, hard to imagine. So every state of matter can be seen as a process at rest, so to speak, at its corresponding plane of consciousness, obviously. You know, the physical, you see the physical, but look at all the many processes that go into our body that make it, for a time being, not at rest, because inside there is something going on, but our sheath of skin makes it so I can sit still here and nothing is moving, but within, there is a lot going on. And so is it with all the other beings and entities that live at the other levels of consciousness and other planes of consciousness. But what makes all this happen? All this is possible thanks to fire and the qualities of fire. I'm just going to stop here for a few seconds and say, or ask if anyone has any questions so far, because we are going to go way deeper into this, if time permits. Is anything that sparks your attention or would like to contribute or would like to, you know, add to it? You are welcome to. Silence is good. It's always good. So should we move on then? So fire has two sides to it. There's an outer fiery appearance that we see, of course, is things are burning and the elements are, you have the wax and everything else. But then there is another side to it that has to do with warmth, is the inner side of fire that we perceive, you know, within the fire itself, but also if you are outside and, you know, get a little closer, you feel that warmth. Also, warmth is a twofold thing. You have an outer warmth that you can see, for example, if you go to a desert and you see the mirages, you know, in the shallow dunes of the desert. Or you are driving a very hot summer and you see the steam coming off the roads. If you go to Cuba, you see that a lot. And maybe in India, you see more than that. You see more than that in the roads. But you see what I'm saying, right? You go around a campfire and you see the waves of warmth and heat with the blades of the, you know, with the fire flames. But also there is an inner side to this warmth. And you say that you can feel it inside of all the other elements. It's something very interesting. You know, the earth, all those gardeners know very well that warmth hides in the earth like anything and make things possible, make life possible on earth at all levels. But interesting enough, it is said that man feels himself in the element of warmth. Even though we are made out of many other elements, you know, everything else composes this body, but yet we feel ourselves in the element of warmth. I don't know if you are familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, but in the discourse 11, at the end of it, you know, Krishna manifests himself as in a cosmic form, and Arjuna was so scared and perplexed by this, he couldn't handle it. And the end of the vision, he said, the universe is burning, Vishnu, with that blazing flame. You know? So that was how this cosmic being or, you know, cosmic self felt within him at that moment. Of course it was a vision, but it was also a physical feeling. So there is an inner fire, which is the bridge between the body and the soul, between matter and spirit, and between the invisible and the visible. It is very interesting because the other day in our Dharma group, my dear brother Roger said to me, "You have to have some fire in your presentation." I hadn't gotten to there yet. I was still thinking of school and other things. So he showed up with this cosmic being, an enormous flame. And there was a little wrap around it. And the brand of the candle was Threshold. I was shocked. And I say, "Do you plan for this?" And say, "No. I had no clue. I thought that you just needed a candle and I just brought you one." And I said, "Okay, well, I think someone else was behind this." So, I mean, it was very meaningful to me. So when fire is produced, we also have three objective things. You know, you have light, which, you know, it is invisible. You cannot see light per se. You know, you see the colors and you see the chemical processes of it, but then you see the objects and the colors of the object. But in see, you know, in itself, it is something that you cannot hold, you cannot grasp. But then you have warmth again, and you have something called smoke. So I would like us to, for a moment, reflect in few words that my friend Natalie would like to read to you. And let's close our eyes. And this is not just a meditation. This has a scientific perspective to it. But it is a bridging to the realm of spirit in a very interesting way. So for a few moments, let us close our eyes while she is reading.
Let us imagine that we reduce air to a watery condition. Air itself is nothing but solidified warmth, densified warmth in which smoke has been formed. The spiritual part, which really wanted to be in the fire, has been bewitched into smoke. Spiritual beings, which are also called elementals, are bewitched in all air, and will even be bewitched, banished, so to speak, to a lower existence when air is changed into water. Hence, spiritual science sees in everything that is outwardly perceptible something that has proceeded from an original condition of fire or warmth and which has turned into air, smoke, or gas. When the warmth began to condense into gas, gas into liquid, liquid into solid. Look backwards, says the spiritual scientist. Look at any solid substance. That solidity was once liquid. It is only in the course of evolution that it has become solid, and the liquid was once upon a time gaseous, and the gaseous formed itself as smoke out of the fire. From Rudolf Steiner, The Spiritual Hierarchies.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So as you can see, there is a process going on there, and it's a process that I call transmutation. Not only me, it's being called transmutation. This process has to do precisely with this condensation and crystallization of whether you call it consciousness or the spirits that indwell it into matter, and the etherealization and materialization of substances into higher and finer states of being or lower states of being. You know, it depends on if it is condensing, if it is crystallizing, it's into lower, and if it is etherealizing, into higher. But this is not a higher and low in terms of which one is best, but it is a hierarchical arrangement in terms of tangibility, you know, how tangible, how perceptible they are. Remember HPB axiom, there is not such a thing as a great or a small thing. We are all the same, from the smallest atom to the greatest of all archangels. There is not a discrimination in the divine economy. Everything is equally taken into account. So our true ignorance really lies in our distorted and our undeveloped vision, our wrong identification with these ever-changing forms. Let us take a step further into the element of fire and look at its threefold spiritual nature. You have the cosmic fire as the divine self or God, and this is what Pythagoras called the central fire, which was placed in a spot in the universe around which the sun and all the other galaxies orbited around. So it is said that he was the first person who came up with the concept of heliocentric model of the universe. Then, you know, the clever Copernicus attributed himself with it, but he didn't give any credit whatsoever to Pythagoras, but Pythagoras himself studied with people from Egypt who had knowledge from the ancient reaches, you know, of India and from previous, you know, human epochs. And this knowledge was handed down to them, and they knew of these truths, but they didn't write about it. They just held them in their hearts because they knew they were one with it. There was no need to explain. However, at the time of Pythagoras, things started changing, and you know, his sodality was called, you know, his brotherhood that he founded there, it was completely persecuted and they had to hide and all that. I mean, what were they doing? They were doing evil things against whatever church and whatnot was happening, you know? And they were talking about these things. We have taken all these things for granted. Now we study chemistry, we study all this biology and all this mathematics. Back then, these were mysteries, but ensouled with the spiritual teaching. Now you remove that, and what is left is what you have now as modern science, you know, all the other branches of knowledge. But back then, everything was one science of the spirit. You see, we have gone too far. I don't know how far we are going to go, and I don't know what is going to happen, but we have to wake up at some point. So these great initiates were called also the sons of fire, for this particular reason. They knew these secrets. So, and then you also have the individual sparks. Actually, prior to that, you have the universal flames, which is at this lower level. You have the oversoul of the universes. Now, we all know that we don't dwell in space of one, you know, Milky Way alone. There are millions and trillions of galaxies, you know, orbiting around the whole entire cosmos. Cosmos with a K. HPV liked to talk about this word so much. And throughout the readings, the editors confused this word from head to toe. And the word cosmos with a K is a Greek word for the totality of life, you know, from a cosmic perspective, as a whole. So hold that in your consciousness for a moment, how big and dear it is. It's wonderful. So to those flames, universal flames, some people call the Christ, as far as our universe is concerned, the cosmic Christ. Or you have Ishvara, you know, the oversoul of this universe. But then you also have the individual sparks. And as I said, these are the individualized souls, that spark of divinity, the self, shining and burning in the heart of every living being, from the smallest speckle of dust to the mightiest of all gods or devas. You know, the other day I was reading the news on the internet, and I came across something extraordinary, and I had never heard of this before, ignorant me. And it has something to do with the sand, not sand, but the dust of the Sahara Desert. For some mysterious reason, this Sahara dust travels thousands of miles across the Atlantic Ocean every year. Tons of it. Do you know what it does? Do you have any clue what it does? It feeds the rainforest of the Amazon. How in the world these speckles of dust know that they have to go there because the platform there gets depleted of minerals. This dust is very rich in phosphorus and other minerals that is just wonderful for the rainforest. How does it know it has to travel there? I mean, can someone explain this to me? I really don't know, but I was marveled at it. So, you know, with the rains and the floods and all that, all the soil gets depleted. So nature knows that when there is an abundance of something, it takes from there and it brings it to what it needed to do. We do that as human beings, but nature does that also in mysterious ways. So see, there is life hidden in everything. And it's just, you know, when I heard that news, I just couldn't believe it. I shared with few friends, and the reason why the news came about is because they knew about this for a very long time, but science finally could make a three-dimensional model of this in a computer and made these cross sections of the Earth and through the air, and you could see the clouds, the golden clouds of the sand of the desert flying around across the globe to the other side to feed the Amazons. Just search on the internet. There's a video about it. It's very beautiful. It says the Sahara dust feeds the Amazon rainforest. Google that. You will be amazed. Truly amazing. So we could look at men as a stage of conscious evolution in between these two realms, in between realms of the elementals, the elements, and the spiritual beings. Is a place of transition for all these elements and elemental beings to ascend or descend into higher or lower forms. The inner activity of the soul burns in men as in a candle. When the candle is completely burned, our task as human beings is done. And a new life begins in the realm of the spiritual beings. So our spiritual process does not stop or does not come to an end at the level of smoke. I would like to read a passage from the Bhagavad Gita that it is read at the time of cremation ceremonies in India. As you know, cremation is a is something that is practiced in India from time immemorial because they knew the secrets of this. They knew what fire did to the matter, to the elements. They set them free. It is said that death was the threshold to freedom, you know, to freedom and to a new life, to the life of spirit and the life of light. So they chant this over and over. You know, it takes from sunrise to sunset for a human body to be completely turned to ashes. It is a very, very slow process. Unless you put it into one of those electronic things and put the fire like the modern way of cremation. But the slow process of it, this is when you are cooking the food at a very slow fire, you know how good it tastes? Similarly, you know, I mean, seriously, this is an alchemical process. Listen to this. It's not nothing disgusting about it. God is cooking our bodies in a way and turning them, you know, sublimating, taking these earthly substances and transforming them back into the cosmic forces. It's the reverse process of cooking in a way, you know? Well, cooking also. You do it, but then you eat it, and then inside of our bodies, it turns into, you know, when you go to church, you say, I'm eating the body of Christ. I am drinking the blood. No, actually, you're not. When it gets into you, it turns into that, you know? It's not when you take it out. It's when it comes into you, it transmutes, and then you elevate it, you know? It's the other opposite process. So anyway, back to the Gita here. This is taken from the Yoga of the Indestructible Supreme Eternal. And this is the discourse number 8. And it is recited as the body is cremated. Imagine, this takes a very long time and all the family is there. The son is participating, especially is in charge of this cremation ceremony. Priests, relatives. I mean, it's a big deal when this is happening. And part of this is read. It says, fire, light, daytime, the bright fourth night, the 6 months of the northern path of the sun, then going forth, the men who know the eternal go to the eternal. Smoke, nighttime, the dark fortnight, also, the 6 months of the northern path, of the southern path, pardon, of the sun. Then the yogi, obtaining the moonlight, which this moonlight has to do with the lunar or astral body. And he said, not until this astral body is completely disintegrated and sublimated into higher and higher, subtler and subtler state of consciousness, we continue to incarnate over and over again. So the 6 months of the silent path, then the yogi, obtaining the moonlight, returneth. Light and darkness, these are thought to be the world's everlasting paths. By the one he goes who returneth not. By the other, he who returneth again. So that's the wisdom of the Gita. You know, you have, in this book, there are answers to almost all human questions. It is my favorite book of all. If I am to choose one, it's little. Entitled, therefore, we should look beyond the realm of smoke into the realm of the eternal light. This can only happen when the mind is awake, serene, open, harmonious, and bright. Just as when a candle shines unflickering in a windless place. The condition of our minds and souls, even our moods, are not to our concern alone, but it affects the whole cosmos. The most important thing we gain from study theosophy and any other spiritual teaching or esoteric teaching, if you will, has to do with gaining this deep feeling or awakening in us, this deep feeling of responsibility, this sensitivity, this love for all sentient beings. For life as a whole. And this is the true realization of universal brotherhood, the first object of the Theosophical Society. I would like to conclude this sharing tonight by suggesting to ourselves, to myself, that we become just like the rishis. And we meditate on fire with the same feeling of reverence and wonder for nature, so that the inner activities of our souls and spirit become just like that of fire, so that we can serve nature as spiritual agents through the power and forces of our thinking, our pure feeling, and our right actions, and our selfless actions. So behold the light, behold the day, behold the life. Thank you all. So I would love to keep sharing with you, and I'm sure that some of you have some questions, but I also wanted to invite my dear friend Tanya, and she is a wonderful musician, and she has a song that she wanted to share with us about fire. But before she comes up to the stage, let us open to a little bit of a discussion. If anyone of you has an insight, and I would like to hear from your experience with fire. And if you have any questions, I will be glad to go into it with you. And this can go even deeper, but really we have no time for that. Manuji, the other day we were talking about something to do with fire at the entrance of the houses.
For the light, you know. I think one of the meditation technique is to gaze on the light of a diya or a candle, you know. And when you keep on gazing at it, you know, you can see the light flickering up.
Mm-hmm.
The same taken, you see three colors, pretty prominent. One is white, the other one is red, and the third one is a blue. And the white color represents the stage, you know, where you go from a jnana, from to jnana, means from, how do we call it, the state of knowledge. To knowledge. And it's the concentration of the goddess Saraswati, you know, the goddess of knowledge. And the red color signifies, the red color signifies, you know, the Agni, or the nourishment, you know, the process of nourishment that goes on, that is worship to Agni, or in the other case, it's Lakshmi, you know, the goddess of Vishnu.
That's interesting.
The consort of Vishnu, you know. So it's for nourishment. And the third light would be a blue, would be to the Parvati, or the consort of Shiva, which represents, the blue color represents the strength. So, you know, these are the three forces that elevate us, you know, to further concentration, you know.
That's very interesting. I think that that kind of meditation is called Tatrak meditation. Yeah, it's part of the tantric practices. And what they see is, and actually you can see it, if you are in a pitch dark place and you are gazing to a flame and there is no wind blowing, of course, that flame is so still. And what it creates a sphere around it. It's the most gorgeous thing. And not only has those three colors, but the whole entire spectrum of the element, of the rainbow. And it's red in the outside, inward, until it comes to purple, and then white, and then the light. It's the most gorgeous thing. Just have some fun and experiment. Burn a candle, you know, I mean, light on the candle in a dark place, and you see. And that was one of the first insights into the mysteries of the cosmos, you know, meditating upon this phenomena. You see, as above, so below, if you have that correspondence principle in your mind all the time, you are able to get deep insights through observing life and all its processes. It's there. All you need to do is to connect with that life in there, and that thing will talk back to you. And the doctors would not tell you that you are crazy, because you're not going to tell anybody. All right? So just hold it in your heart, in your feeling. So anyone else has a question to share or a comment?
I've not heard the as so above, as so below as above. Well, elaborate on that again. Where was the origin of that saying again?
Well, you know, there was this wonderful initiate in Egypt. His name was Hermes Trismegistus. And it was a name that, it was a hybrid in between a Greek god and an Egyptian god. And they call it like that. So it seems like Pythagoras took some classes with him. But anyway, the point of it is that the laws of nature work in such a way that it affects the minutest things as well as the greatest things. Let us say we have cycles, cycles within our bodies, right? We also have cycles of the earth, but we also have cosmic cycles. And those cycles obey the same laws, but you have to study them. It's not something that you can just see and then you realize immediately. You know, these insights into nature took the Rishis years to realize. This was not something that they would read and they would come up with the answer. Absolutely not. There were not books back then. They would read the Akashic records. That was the only thing they could read, right? So, I mean, there are many other examples that you can just, you know, relate to. Yes, you know, the planetary movement. This is how the music of the spheres came up. This is how the musical scale came about. Meditating on the orbits of the planets around the sun. You have the upper tetrachord and the lower tetrachord. And in between, you have this note that connects, you know, the G, the F, and the G. You know, above, there were the heavenly realm. And below, there were the lower tones. So when you relate all this, you know, into a bigger picture. For this, you have to look at nature with cosmic eyes. You see? Not the eyes of the little self, but the eyes that transcend that, so that you are able to look at the whole. And we are able to do that. But again, our mind and our hearts have to be very still and with a tremendous reverence and wonder for what we are seeking. You know? Otherwise, the magic really doesn't happen. It doesn't talk back to us. It's not that we are going crazy. It's just like there's something missing there, you know? You can apply it to so many other things, you know, to so many other things in nature. Yes, Teresa?
Do you think that, like, in the purest form of the soul, that fire is the closest representation to what the purest form of, like, your soul and your spirit is? Like, fire is the closest to what we are outside of our physical body.
I'm just going to speak the question again so that it can be recorded, because it's a very interesting one. She's saying that if the fire is the closest representation to what we really are, to our true nature, can that be summarized like that? And I would say, as I said, the fire is the symbol, it's like a threshold. It's a bridge in between the visible and the invisible. And sure, it can be related to the human being, right? Because there is a part of us, as I say, the upper tetrachord, you know, half of us is spirit. You know, half of us, our mind and feelings, our inner realms that we are not able to tangibly perceive, but you feel it. There is so much more to us than just that, right? Then you have just all the physical things, but yet there are no physical. Inside of us, just the metabolic system is burning things all the time. The nervous system, it is all the time trying to die. It's actually the nervous system is cooling within the body. But then the circulatory system and the blood is heating, is warming up. The heart is pumping all the time. And if you go deep into what is happening just inside of our bodies, you will realize that it is nothing but warmth and a transmutation of substances that are happening there. And at the moment of death, all these elements are set free. At the moment of rebirth, all these elements come together. This is a whole different topic for a whole different lecture, but it's a very, very mysterious, you know? It's very, very mysterious. It is said in India, the holy rishis said that we had three depths when we are born as human beings. One of them is, of course, to our teachers. No, first of all, to our parents, for giving us this body and this opportunity, this channel to incarnate into the physical and to fulfill our dharmas. The second one is owed to the scriptures or the gurus. The third one is owed to the elements, because to the elements, and obviously, I'm talking about God, obviously, right? But that is what builds it all. So it's as deep as that, Teresa. It's very profound. Yes.
So could the flame be the source of, like, inspiration and creativity? I mean, can you kind of comment on that?
Yes, very much so. Or it could be your destruction, you know, because it has that twofold nature to it. Too much fire inside of you, too much consciousness, first of all, inside of you, could bring you to death. If you don't die in the evening, if you don't sleep in the evening, you will burn. Because too much thinking is detrimental. Thinking, the daily processes are killing the body all the time. The body is dying. When you fall asleep, the body regenerates. See how beautiful this stuff is, okay? So you have the fire that creates, but the same fire that destroys. But always to build at a higher state of consciousness. It's never to, you know, just to, for the sake of breaking things. No, no, no. There is a lawful thing to that. So there is a fire to do with intuition, you know, the light of intuition, the light of awareness, you know, the enlightened ones. What did they behold, you know? They beheld the light because that was their state of consciousness. So it can be related to that as well. But as the element of fire, you know, fire is not only light, you see? There's more to fire. And this can be analogous to the body, you know? In fact, when you light a candle, it is said that all the elements are there present. You have the mineral kingdom, you have the animal kingdom. Sorry, you have the mineral, the vegetable, the animal kingdom, and also, you know, the kingdoms above. Nowadays, you make candles not out of beeswax, but beeswax was supposed to be an element from the animal kingdom, right? In fact, when you go to the church, the candles that are lit in the altar of the Christian church or Catholic church have to have a percentage, high percentage of beeswax. Because these were part of the mysteries, you know. They don't talk to these people. They don't talk these things with the lay people, you know. These are things that are kept within the, you know, the wisdom of the priests and bishops and whatnot. And there is so much more to the rituals there that has to do with fire as well. They are dealing with all the cosmic entities and cosmic hierarchies. In the altar, they have six candles. But again, that's a whole different subject, but it's happening not just because. They used to call it ceremonial magics. All these rituals, the fire ceremony of the Hindus, the sacrifice, the fire sacrifice, they were, you know, putting into this fire herbs and substances that when they put it into the fire, they released their elementals into their spiritual realm. So there was a conscious act when they did these things. And the prayers, of course, helped to elevate all these, you know, elements. And this is our function. As human beings, we are a transition stage of consciousness. So it is up to us whether we want to partake in the light or in the dark. But they are always there. You choose. I choose both because in the evening I meditate in the dark. In the morning, I behold the sunlight. So, rooted in both and my heart in God. Something like that. So, it is past 8 o'clock, but I would like to call Tanya if she would like to share this wonderful song with us.
So, I want to first start a little intro before I get into this tune. By letting you all in on a juicy secret, which is that if anybody happens to come across my cell phone, you could access it by the password, which is fire. The password is primarily to keep the youngsters from messing with it, but it's also an opportunity for me many, many times a day to write out that word because of how much meaning it has for me. So it's continually reinforcing how important fire is for me, particularly at this phase of my development, because it's burning through so many illusions that I'm rebirthing in a lot of ways, so fire is very significant. So anyway, that's my deep, dark secret. And this tune is actually also, in many ways, you could say it's kind of Akashic in a way. And it's also kind of encouraging us to go back to our origins. And that's one area of deep interest of mine, is to have us remember who we are and remember our core of who we are. So this tune is an attempt to take us all to that place.
The original tune? You wrote it?
It's a mixture. It's a blend.
Oh.
not see that our history is real. So come with me to the firelands. Come take my hand through the risk of the night, and we shall go to the firelands. Oh, can you feel it? Do you see it? The painted flames along the sky. And we will dance in storms and sunshine. Stay with me in the firelands. Awaken your souls to the stories of old, for they are real in the firelands. The winds that have blown our memories to stone come alive in the firelands. For you have traveled and forgotten. Your soul was born of the wind and flame. Do you remember? Please remember. You are a child of the firelands. Flames that destroy and flames that invoke are yours to command in the firelands. Reborn in the ash, all illusions uncast, take this torch from the firelands. Oh, you have history and you are ancient. You are real in the firelands. And our beginning and our ending will return to the firelands.